is a presentation of KSL Sports. Hello, Cougar Nation.
Hand off middle. First down. Touchdown! And listen to the Cougar Nation.
Every Monday night, we break down the Cougars' last game and look ahead to next week. Cougar Nation, brought to you by Blue Barn Wealth. Here's BYU insider Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte on Utah's legacy home of the Cougars, KSL News Radio.
Good evening, Cougar fans. Welcome on into Cougar Nation, your weekly look, reacting to the latest BYU football game. Mitch Harper, Matt Biamonte, coming to you live from Broadcast House here in Salt Lake City, Utah. So much to unpack from BYU's 35-6 setback against the Texas Longhorns in Austin, Texas. We'll share our takeaways. We'll give out some helmet stickers. Also discuss what's trending up and trending down. And also take your phone calls. So load it up, Cougar Nation. 801-575-8255. 801-575-8255. 8255. Get on board and share your thoughts on this BYU football loss to Texas.
What was the most disappointing part of the loss? That's what I want to hear from, because there's a lot of different ways that we can go. But Mitch, let's get into our first takeaway, and on maybe a lighter note, from what was a tough afternoon in Austin.
Cougar Nation takeaways. Mitch and Matt analyze BYU's last week of play and what it means for the next week.
All right, a lot of angles that you can go. We typically only do three takeaways here in this top segment as we await your phone calls, 801-575-8255. What were your takeaways? What was the most disappointing part of the loss? I'll tell you what, this was a bright spot in what was a tough afternoon, Mitch. That BYU defense, they played exceptionally well. BYU was in this football game midway through the fourth quarter before Texas really opened it up. But you got to commend what the defense did. They forced turnovers. They had big stops on fourth down. They've been fighting the injury bug all season long, and guys keep making plays. It's impressive.
It was impressive, and I thought the defense just as a whole is trending up, and they just continue to get a lot better. And they're an opportunistic group. I thought Crew Wakely, he had that interception, and, you know, Crew spoke in the postgame that he's not in panic mode and he's excited for what's ahead for this team still.
I don't think anybody's in panic mode by any means. Like Eden said, there's a lot of good things to take away from this game.
There is, and I think that for the defense especially, because of an interception that Crew Wakely had, also the takeaway that Zay Banya had with the fumble. I just think that the defense, you know, those goal line stands that they had, they're a group that they're going to fight till the end, and they give you hope that they're going to make some big play to get the ball back to the offense, but it just wasn't enough for BYU against the talent and athleticism of Texas.
Although this defense isn't as good as the defense I'm about to bring up, you know, it feels a little bit like this is a 2012 light defense. Not nearly as good statistically as that group was, but they make enough plays to keep you around. That 2012 defense was outstanding, and BYU always found themselves in the games. Their offense just wasn't good enough to win a lot of those games, and it feels a lot like that, where this defense is good enough to win you some games. They played well enough for there to be an opportunity to beat Texas, but because the offense is so dang bad, it was just never going to happen.
Takeaway number two, you bring up the offense being bad, and I think one of my big takeaways is questions do have to be asked. At quarterback, I asked Kalani Sitake in the postgame if there was any consideration to go to the, you know, backup quarterback for a spark, and this is what Kalani had to say.
I think everybody thinks that the easy answer is just get another quarterback in there. It's like, how about let's just protect for him first and give him a chance.
You agree with that commentary from Kalani after what took place from Keaton Slovis, who finished the day with 197 yards on 24 of 39 passing?
I 100% agree with Kalani in this case. I'm not here to say Keaton's been great, but I feel like the problems are so vast and so deep. I don't know if a quarterback change would make a whole lot of difference. And there's just so many issues offensively right now that, sure, maybe there's a pie-in-the-sky spark, but I do believe the protection's not good enough, the run game's not good enough. It just, all facets offensively are contributing to what is one of the worst offenses in the past 50 years, Mitch.
It is a bad group, and it's shocking because I feel like the talent is far better than, say, 2017, 2003. Those are some of the worst offenses that I've seen. Even 2012 was not a good one. You know, they've got talent on this offense. I think Keaton Slovis has even shown moments where he's looked really good against, you know, say Kansas.
Yep.
That first month of the season, he didn't have big numbers against Arkansas, but he capitalized on opportunities to put BYU in a position to pull off an upset in Fayetteville. I'm with you. I don't think that Slovis needed to be benched per se, but I think that down the stretch in the season, in the final month of the year, it's critical to get to that sixth win. You're not going to be a favorite in any of the games moving forward. I think you can understand in Texas' spot, you go, Texas is just an elite team, whether it's Retzlaff, whether it's Slovis, nothing's going to change. It is what it is. This is Texas. I don't like that mentality, but that's kind of the vibes BYU put off, was like, this is Texas. We're not going to run down their throat.
Totally.
It's Texas. Again, I don't
love that.
I don't agree with that mindset, but okay, I'll make an exception there. But down the final stretch, West Virginia this week, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, if Slovis doesn't have it and he's struggling, I don't think you should have any fear just for a moment, for a drive or two or something, to see what Retzlaff or someone else or Ryder Burton or Nick Billups or whoever it may be, Cade Finnegan, to give something to the offense, because the offense was completely inept. They go 2 of 13 on third down against Texas. If you get to just, you know, 5 of 13, what does that do to change the dynamic, the feel of the game?
Yep.
For so long, it was 21-6, and the defense is doing everything in their power to make this thing close. I just think you can't afford – you got to get to bowl eligibility, Matt. You got to get that sixth win, and they got to pull off an upset to do it because they're going to be an underdog this last month of the season.
Taking your calls, 801-575-8255. Sound off, Cougar Nation. Share your takeaways and your disappointments from the performance down in what was an insanely humid and hot afternoon in Austin, Texas.
Yes.
It was nuts down there. Here's my takeaway. I'm going to blow your mind with some stats on third down. If you're in your car, put on your seatbelt, put two hands on the wheel, and brace for impact. I do not want anyone driving off the road and getting into a crash when you hear these stats. You already mentioned the 2 of 13 against Texas. That's obviously bad. They were bottom 10 coming into that game in third down conversion percentage. They were already bad, and then they were horrible against Texas. They're 28% on third down this season. They've had 106 attempts. They're converting 28% of them. This is where I have a big issue. 73% of the time, Mitch, they find themselves in third and five or longer. And when it's third and five and longer, which is happening three-fourths of the time, they're only converting those third downs at a 16% clip. So they're often in third and longer, and they're not converting those. And here is the most alarming stat to me. Well, there's two of them. When it's third and five, third and six, or third and seven, which I think we would all consider at least third and five manageable, right? Like, we get told, oh, we're in third and long so often, you know, we're not in third and manageable. When they're at third and five, six, or seven, they're only converting those 16% of the time. And even worse, when it's third and two, they're converting that 15% of the time. So they are bad on third down all across the board. Like, they're in third and long a lot. Don't get me wrong. 73% of the time, they're in third and long. But when they're not, they're still not converting it. And when it's third and manageable, they're not converting it. Now, you might say, well, on fourth down, they converted a few. Okay, that's great. That's fine and good. But the point here is you're not getting to third and manageable enough. And when you are, you don't convert it enough. And like, to me, that's where it starts and finishes. Because when you're in third and long that often, that means your run game is bad. And it is bad. Like, again, not 100 yards. 26 carries, 95 yards. You take out that Slovis scamper, they're down in the 70s. So offensively, run game perspective, not good. And then, and that's kind of why I feel like, look, Slovis has not been great. But it's hard to pinpoint on him because he's in third and long so dang sure. much because the run – and then it's like third and 11. You're not a running quarterback. The pass protection's not always great. It's just this offense is bad. And to me, I feel like the only fix is something we've discussed on the show multiple times, Mitch. You got to abandon the run. You got to use crossing routes and screen passes and intermediate throws. I'm talking a five-yard out, a five-yard hitch. Make that the run game to get you in third and five or shorter because third and five to third and 15, they are horrific.
Cougar Nation brought to you by Blue Barn Wealth, fee-only fiduciaries who help you live within your meaning, bluebarnwealth.com. We'll get to some of your reaction, your commentary, Cougar Nation. Also give out some helmet stickers from BYU's performance at Texas. It's Cougar Nation here on KSL News Radio, and it's powered by KSL Sports.
Cougar Nation.
A 75-yard touchdown run down the far sideline.
Every Monday at 6 on KSL News Radio.
We do this each and every Monday, Cougar Nation, and we take your calls. We want to hear your reactions to what the freak happened down in Austin, Texas, 801-575-8255. We've got a caller now, and this guy sounds familiar. We might have a repeat caller here, Jesse from Orem. Jesse, did we hear from you last week, Jesse?
You did.
Nice. Yes, welcome back, Jesse. What do you got for us?
So last week I predicted a one-score game.
And we were wrong, Jesse. We were very wrong.
We were way wrong, and it sucks that you don't realize you have blue goggles on until after the game's over, you know.
Yep.
I thought that was a realistic prediction, but I think that one thing that I'd just like to share, and then I won't bug you guys with calls in future weeks.
No, we love your calls. Call every week, Jesse. We love hearing from you.
I think what fans would like to see, you know, coming as from a fan, is an effort to try something new. So, yeah, Keaton might still be the best quarterback on our team, but he might be in a slump, you know, and so Kalani, I love our coaches and everything. I'm not one of those fans that's like, oh, we need new coaches, blah, blah, blah. But they're not perfect, and they're the first ones to admit it at every post game that there's something new that they need to learn, you know, and take from each game that they need to apply into future weeks and stuff like that. And one of the things I admire about coaches like Nick Saban in Alabama and stuff is in the first month of their playing, what, do they start two or three different quarterbacks trying to figure out who is going to play the most smoothly with the offense and actually get the offense going? I don't think that there's anything wrong with when Keaton's having a bad day, subbing him out at half and seeing if someone else can spark us, you know? And from a fan perspective, it'd be nice just to see trying something new, you know, just an effort to like switch it up a little bit and see if something helps.
That's fair, Jesse. And I expect you to call next week. We want to hear from you, man. So don't shy away. We love hearing your calls.
And I agree with okay. Jesse too, because honestly, I feel like you look at BYU statistically offensively, they're near the bottom in every statistical metric in the Big 12. And then it gets, you know, really bad on the rushing game nationally. I just feel like if you go into West Virginia this week, because I feel like this is a game that, even though you're a double-digit underdog, first time since 2004, BYU is a back-to-back game double-digit underdog since 2004. This doesn't happen. They're a 10-point underdog against West Virginia. So the prognosticators say you're not a good football team. I feel like it's a little bit closer margin against West Virginia than that. But if it's a disaster against West Virginia and there's no now limitation on redshirts, I'm okay with just seeing what it might look like. My fear, though, Matt, is if they did ever change the quarterback for a drive or two, is that, or their fear to maybe make any sort of change at quarterback is because they don't feel like there's anyone that's even close to being game ready like we saw last year. Because right. What was the issue last year? Jaren Hall is a banged up man. His
didn't
shoulder is falling.
A lick.
Shoulder's falling off him against Notre Dame. They had to trot him out because no one else they felt confident in with Jacob Conover or anyone else in that quarterback room. That concerns me too. And then you go big picture, long term, you think, well, what do you do in 2024? You have to go get two or three transfer quarterbacks if you don't feel like you got anyone in that room that can play this year. So that I hope that Slovis has a bounce back, and I think he can do it. I just want Roderick to call plays like you were talking about in the previous segment, abandon the run game, and just have the short passing attack be your new run attack. Yep. Think about those air raid offenses from like Texas Tech back in the day with Mike Leach. That was their run attack.
Yep.
And I feel like that's what BYU needs to go to. Just go to Chase Roberts if he's healthy. Hopefully he's dealing okay with the hamstring. We saw him a little bit banged up there at the end there. But I feel like that's got to be the new ground attack for BYU is that short passing game. And I feel like Slovis can have a little more success.
I want to see that before we go to where Jesse went.
I'm with you too.
If we do that and that fails, then sure, let's right. try something else. But can we do the two-minute offense that we saw at the end of the second quarter against Cincinnati for a whole game?
And how disappointing was that to not see it at the end of the first half against Texas?
Yeah.
I was disappointed in that. Like, you have nothing to lose in this game against Texas. You're go down swinging, BYU. Yeah. They just kind of laid it up and said, we're going to the halftime locker room down. Like, come on, be aggressive.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, Mitch, let's give out some helmet stickers. Let's try and get a ray of optimism here with what happened down against the Longhorns.
Cougar Nation, helmet stickers. Mitch and Matt dish out the stickers for BYU's best players this week.
I think there always is rays of sunshine to pull from any game. Maybe not the TCU game a few weeks back, but Texas game, I do feel like there were some glimmers of sun bursting through that humid heat in Austin, Texas. One guy in particular, Zay Banya. Very excited for what I saw from Zay. Thought that was his best game as a BYU Cougar. I was saying last Friday down in Austin on JJ and Alex on the sports KSL Sports Zone, he was a guy that was like, it's time. We got to see something from him. And he comes up with a big sack, forces a fumble on Malik Murphy, who I thought was very underwhelming, and he forces a fumble and then recovers it. That's the type of playmaking ability I want to see from Zay Banya, the Boise State transfer, going forward. And I thought that was a nice breakthrough performance for him. So I'm giving him one of my helmet stickers.
For me, I'm going to give it to Jacob Robinson. The secondary wasn't always great against Texas. There were some plays that were missed, but I thought his individual effort on a fourth down stop where he takes down Jatavion Sanders, who is way bigger than him, for him to make that, first he's got to shed the block, then he makes the tackle. I mean, that was a huge play. And for a guy of Jacob Robinson's size, and look, I'm a small guy myself, so no judgment being passed, but he's not Michael Davis out there, right? He's a smaller, quicker DB, and he makes that play. Tip of the cap to Jacob Robinson. He has far exceeded my wildest dreams for what he would do at BYU.
He's a legit lockdown corner, and maybe he's working his way to eventually one day be an NFL draft pick. Blake Mangelson is my other helmet sticker. Had a career-high 7 tackles for him. Former JUAB high product. He's already a junior, but he is breaking through, having a breakthrough season. And yeah. I feel like when you look at next year, he might be BYU's top D end if you assume that maybe Tyler Batty moves on, because Tyler's been around for a while. He could be one of the top guys in the program next year. And I thought Mangelson, the way he showed up against Texas's O-line, that is something that I feel like you can build off of going forward. Big day for Blake Mangelson.
Added a pass breakup as well. He was fantastic. I'm going to stay on the defensive line as well. One guy we just haven't given enough credit to all season long, this might be more of a season-long helmet sticker with a couple great plays made against the Longhorns, Jackson Cravens. What an underrated addition out of the transfer portal. He has been stout. Him and Mahe have done a really nice job on the inside. Cravens made the play on the other fourth down stop where Texas tried to go just bully ball at the goal line. He's the one who broke it up and forced the attack against Jonathan Brooks. So Cravens has been fantastic. He only had 2 tackles, but for 3 consecutive weeks, this BYU defense has held 3 of the best running backs in the Big 12 below their season average. Think about that. Look, like, Jonathan Brooks still had a nice day. Don't get me wrong. Like, they didn't just shut him down. But Brooks, 16 for 98, like, you can work with that when this is a dude who is top 5 in the country in rushing average. So Jackson Cravens, helmet sticker for me.
Cougar Nation's brought to you by Blue Barn Wealth. We got to get to a break, news, traffic, and weather, and then we will discuss what's trending up and trending down with this BYU football team next here on Cougar Nation. It's powered by KSL Sports.
Cougar Nation.
Touchdown, Cougars take the lead.
Every Monday at 6 on KSL News Radio.
Welcome back in to Cougar Nation. We're breaking down the loss, the Longhorns' loss. BYU in Texas, 35-6. It was not pretty. And we're still taking your calls, 801-575-8255. What takeaways do you have? We already heard from Jesse in Orem. Always good stuff from Jesse. He wants to see a quarterback change, maybe not permanently, but he wants to just see a wrinkle there. What other changes would you like to see, Cougar Nation? 801-575-8255. While we wait for some calls, let's get to some positives and some negatives from the weekend in Texas.
Cougar Nation, trending. What's trending up and what's trending down this football season?
I think one thing that's trending up, we highlighted it in helmet stickers, defensive line.
Yeah.
The way they're being coached by Kelly Papinga, Sione Buha, that group is coming together. And I don't think anyone would think that defensive line personnel-wise is anywhere close to what maybe Jay Hill envisions if this defense is operating at the highest levels that he thinks it could possibly operate at. But the effort, the performance, the technique, the moves that these players are showing, I just like what I'm seeing from the D-line. And I feel like they're going to be part of the fight every single game, and they're going to battle, and they're going to give you a full 60 minutes where they're not going to get pushed around and bullied around. There's good offensive lines in the Big 12, and they faced a really good one with Texas. They're going to face another good one this week with West Virginia, but I feel like that group at the defensive line, relatively healthy too, other than John Nelson, who's dealing with the ankle. He's unlikely this week to play, but I feel like they're in a spot where they are moving up the ladder heading into the final month of the season. That's a good thing to see.
Well said. Trending up for me. There's nowhere else for this to go than up, but at least it is going up, is their fourth down conversion percentage. 2 of 3, but that last one was desperation when they needed it. On that long 11-minute drive, they had 2 fourth-down conversions, which I like to see. They're currently 57th in the country. They're converting 53% of their fourth-down attempts. Last year, they were horrendous on a fourth down, and it may have cost them a couple football games. Notre Dame, East Carolina come to mind. So I like that that is trending in the right direction. The only problem with that stat is it means there's another stat that's going in the wrong direction, which we already discussed, third down.
That's right. And I feel like one of the areas that's trending down for me is the confidence of the offense. Now, the players and the coaches are saying all the right things, Matt. But I feel like at some point, I've seen this with bad offenses in the past from BYU. It starts to snowball when you have consecutive bad games. You know, one game, that's one thing. You can toss that aside and say, that's not the true identity. What we saw at Texas, I feel like, is just who this group is. Offensively, unless something changes how they operate with the passing game, maybe morphing into their new version of the run attack, I just think this is who they are. And that can't lend itself to much confidence. I mean, you think back to like 2017, this group's better than 17. I still suggest that was the worst offense I've ever seen.
Statistically speaking, you're wrong.
I know, but I feel like personnel-wise, this group's got better talent.
That 2017 offense would have made this game a little more interesting. I believe that.
I just struggle to believe that at all. But statistically, you're probably right. I feel like the confidence of the offense is trending down. And Keaton Slovis, he said in the postgame that the team's supporting each other despite these setbacks.
This team's done a great job through adversity, through a lot of things sticking together. There's no finger pointing. I love these guys. We love each other. Defense, offense, you know, regardless of who's having their day, you know, everyone sticks together for the most part.
That makes me feel good, but I just feel like heading into this final month, that group, they got to do something radical because I just feel like if they stay status quo, what we saw in Austin just might be what it is each and every week, and you got to hope that the defense sets up a short field for the offense.
My goodness, I cannot believe I just heard that. This 2017 offense, pretty bad now that I'm looking at the stats, woof. Zero.
Oh, they were terrible, man.
0 points against LSU. I mean, somehow somehow they almost beat Utah.
Doesn't make sense.
6 points against. Anyways, we don't need to rehash which offense is worse. This is a good segue to me. You talked about doing something radical. Let's do something radical. Where's the trick plays? Where's the fun and creativity offensively? By my count, we've seen one trick play in like the last 3 weeks. And I don't even consider that play a trick play anymore because they run it so dang much where they pitch it a couple times and then Rex sneaks out down the sideline. We've seen that play a dozen times. I love that play. That's not what we saw with Parker Kingston throwing it to Deion Smith at Arkansas. Where is that? Where is a, you know, go back to 2018 when you're throwing from Hifo to Marone Laulu Pututau. Where is that action? I feel like that's been trending down. Just the creativity in the play calling, empty it out. Like, we're at the point now where whatever is in the playbook, heck, do what the Chiefs do. Throw in some new plays in the middle of the week. Give it a name. Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce, I don't give a rip. But, like, let's see something where they're dancing a circle like the Chiefs did against your beloved Raiders and the play failed. But I want to see stuff because that means that we're doing all that we can. Right now, all I'm seeing is this is the offense we installed, and come hell or high water, this is who we're going to be. And that's going to result in a lot more of what we saw in Texas.
Trending down, another one for me, Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift costumes. I'm already sick of seeing those. But, you know, another thing I do want to seriously add, I'm also concerned trending down clock management, coaching decisions. To not know that there was a back-to-back timeout rule, that's inexcusable, Matt. And there's been too many of these – decisions and timeouts. You think about what game was it? Was it Southern Utah or Sam Houston? They come out of the halftime break.
I think it was Sam Houston.
And they're burning a timeout before a snap is called in the third quarter.
They don't ever get to the fourth quarter with three timeouts.
And even in the second half against Texas, they had a timeout that they called because they had the wrong personnel. You can't do that. In a game where all these games where you're going to be an underdog, you have to take care of those timeouts. You can't afford to lose them. I know they wanted to use the timeout, the second one, and they had to ultimately take a delay of game. But imagine if they punch in a touchdown there instead of settling for a field goal. It's just a different dynamic. It's a different feel. Suddenly, Texas is feeling a little heat. Malik Murphy's feeling a little pressure. He felt no worry that BYU's offense was going to press him. That's why Sark was going for it on fourth and two every time. He's like, okay, if we get stopped, good luck going 98 yards.
Yeah, totally.
You guys aren't going to do it. This isn't the offense of 96 where we're wheeling and dealing and throwing 539 against Texas A&M. Like, those days are not – they're not coming through that door to this year. So I think that, you know, that's something, too, that I feel is trending down a little bit is clock management. That's got to get a lot better from this staff.
Got to get better. We're taking your calls, 801-575-8255. Earlier, Jesse wants to see a shakeup at the quarterback spot. Ryan from Syracuse, do you want to see a change at quarterback?
No, I don't think it's quarterback. I don't think it's gimmick plays. It's going back to fundamentals in the line of scrimmage. I think you got it completely wrong. You cannot go away from the run. You got to develop the run. You got to block, and you got to own the line of scrimmage. That sets up your pass, your RPO, all of it comes from the line of scrimmage. The big boys up front are just not getting it done, plain and simple. Back to fundamental blocking, give your quarterback time, let the run play develop, all of that. Until they can block, they'll never succeed.
Thanks for the call, Ryan. He's not wrong. It starts up there. My counterpoint to that would be we're eight games in. It's like how much longer can you wait for the big boys up front to play fundamental football? Yeah. At some point, you got to scheme around the lack of strength.
And that's the identity of BYU football the last few years. I mean, I honestly thought that was going to be the identity. Was that? And that's why I felt Kean Slovis would fit so well at BYU, because they got a great offensive line. I thought personnel-wise, Connor Pay, Kingsley Suamati, I think these are NFL linemen. I think Waylon Lapuaho's a stud. I think Braden Kime's really good. I had high expectations for ETN. That didn't pan out. But I just feel like the personnel on the O-line – yeah, I'm blown away that they're not good. I'm stunned, Matt, because I just feel like the talent's there.
From a recruiting perspective, is as good as you've ever had?
I mean, you'd have to probably go back. There were some great offensive lines in the 80s and also in the 90s, too. Larry Moore, offensive lineman, 96. He was in Texas.
I just mean from a recruiting perspective.
Yeah, recruiting-wise.
Because there's been other lines that were under-recruited and far exceeded those ratings.
You got a five-star tackle in Kingsley, and it feels pedestrian because I feel like his talent – it's just being masked because this group as a collective whole is not good. And that's shocking because Kalani's, to that caller's point, Kalani wants his team's the heart and soul to be the offensive line. And that was day one when he stepped on campus in 2016. He wanted a humongous offensive line that was going to maul people and push them back, the opposing lines. That hasn't happened this year.
We got some more calls on deck. We got to take a break. Michael from Texas, you're coming up next on the other side. Keep the calls coming. 801-575-8255. Your reactions to the loss against Texas will continue on the other side.
Cougar Nation.
The Cougars picked it up.
Monday at 6 on KSL News Radio.
That's right. Every Monday night, 6 to 7, it's Cougar Nation here on KSL News Radio, and it's also available on podcast. So if you missed any part of the show, you can go on kslsports.com or all podcasting platforms and get this podcast. Just search Cougar Nation. Cougar Nation is brought to you by Blue Barn Wealth. Blue Barn Wealth, fee-only fiduciaries who help you live within your meaning. BlueBarnWealth.com. Cougar Nation is for you, Cougar fans, and that's why we take your phone calls to let your voice be heard about this BYU football team. Let's jump out to the phone line again. Welcome in Michael from Texas. Michael from Texas, you want to talk about leadership in this BYU program? What's on your mind?
Yeah, just thanks for taking my call. Just a couple things, guys, that you guys have touched on already tonight. I was at the game. I thought that the game was lost on the fourth and two at the goal line. When I came home, it was even worse. As I watched on TV, you can see the offensive players shaking their heads as they go to the sideline, knowing that they're going to give up the delay of game. They really wanted that. That's a huge coaching failure there. So that's just got to be better. But like, as I mentioned, yes, the, you know, when I look at Kalani Sitake era teams, I don't, you know, there's this narrative this year and first year in the P5. We're building the talent. We don't have the talent, especially after coming out of this game. You know, Texas is just more talented. I don't think BYU's problem is a talent problem. Hmm. In fact, the best teams in the Kalani Sitake era had a bunch of two-star or no-star dogs that just, they were dogs out there. And they're now in the NFL still being dogs. And you have seen on the offensive side of the ball, not just this year, but also some of last year, just a lack of dogs on the field. There's people that may have been really talented. There's a few that went to the NFL, but they're just lacking those leaders that just grind out there. You know, like who are those guys on the offensive side? I mean, I know Crew Wakely's a dog. I'm watching that. I've seen that. I know Blake Mangelson is, but I can't point out those guys on the offensive side of the ball, and I haven't seen it for probably almost 2 years now on that side of the ball. And so I think as BYU evaluates going forward on that side, what they're recruiting on that side, I don't just want to see stars. I want to see dogs. And so that's all I wanted to point out. I don't think BYU has a talent problem.
I don't disagree, Michael. Great stuff.
I like that.
Yeah, great stuff from Michael in Texas. I don't disagree. I will add some color to the 4th and 2 that, you know, Michael said maybe we lost the game there because we couldn't punch it in and make it 14-7 instead of 14-3. It's come out that there was a specific play call there that was only going to work based on a certain look. Yeah. That to me, again, to come back to, it's unacceptable to not understand the new rules. They came out with a play call saying if it's what we want it to be, we'll run it. Otherwise, we'll take another timeout. That's a preparation thing.
Yep.
Those days are over. You can't do that anymore. That used to be a nice little strategic thing in the old days. Come out. Let's see what they're in. If they're not in what we want, we're going to regroup. That was the plan. And I just hate that. Like, in a situation like that, don't you have two or three of your favorite plays? This is what we're going to do. We're going out here confident rather than trying to play the strategic game. So I think he's absolutely right. And that observation of them coming off the field knowing that, uh-oh, we didn't have a timeout to take there, and now we got to take a delay of game, that hurts the confidence, no doubt.
That one's on Sitake and Aaron Roderick. I feel like empower Keenan Slovis then. If you're going to continue to roll with him, let him have the autonomy to check out of a play because he knew it. I asked him about in the postgame, did you know about the backup or back-to-back timeout rule? He said, yeah, absolutely. He's like, I knew the moment we were trying to call for it wasn't going to happen. Let him then call the play out of it at the line of scrimmage. Because
we don't see that. Where is the, hey, here's two plays. Go here. If it's not there, go to the...
Empower Slovis.
Yes.
If you're going to continue to roll with him as the quarterback, and I'm okay with that, empower him then and let him call out of something because he's ultimately the one that's going to have to execute this offense. So that was a bad look for the coaches, and I think that the dog mentality, though, I think that is a great point because...
They had some dogs last year, though. Puka's a dog.
Oh, yeah, and Puka was a 4-star, you know, all-world talent. And I think people that suggest that we weren't – no one was talking about him being an amazing player. Like, everyone around BYU was talking about how amazing he was. Kalani said he was the best receiver in college football, just he was always hurt. Anyway, we got to get to the phone line again. We got another Michael. It's time from Harriman. We go from Texas to Harriman. Michael from Harriman, what's on your mind?
Well, I agree with the first caller that we had. I think Keith Slovis is a good quarterback. It's that offensive line. Who's the leader in that offensive line? And to pull the weight, to rally the troops on that offensive line. I played football, and if you don't have a good offensive line to open up the holes, to open up the gaps, I sat there and I watched how quickly that pocket dropped off because they couldn't do their job. I'm surprised they have a lot of talent, but who's helping them develop that talent and push them to get to that higher quality of that line, offensive line? Your offensive line is the first. Your quarterback needs to be protected so they could do the plays and run the plays, what they need to do. But if the pocket's collapsing so fast, it comes down to your offensive coach who's on the offensive line and your offensive line. And I just want to hear your comments because I really believe it's the offensive line. It's not the quarterback. It's the offensive line not pulling their weight.
I think we all agree the offensive line's not. What's the solution, though, Michael? Like, how would you get around that this year? Because I just don't see it changing this year.
I really think you got a lot of talent. Someone needs to step up on that offensive line and take the bull by the horns and say, this is our responsibility. Yes, Keith Slovis could get up in their faces and say, hey, protect me and do your job, but someone else needs to do that on the offensive line as well to have that camaraderie to uphold that offensive line. I don't see any leaders on that offensive line. It breaks down too quick. And I really believe that someone needs to empower someone on that offensive line to do it, whether it's Keith Slovis getting in their faces and say, hey, you protect me so I can do my job, or have the coach get on them in practice, say, we got a lot of talent here. Who's going to be the leader?
Michael, I appreciate the call.
Everyone has a leader on that.
You know what? And the thing is, I feel like the offensive line, one area that they have performed well, I feel like, is pass protection. They did go up against one of the best defensive lines last week. And I think that's where I feel like Matt and I are kind of in the same page, where they're good at pass protection, this O-line. They're pretty solid there. So make this a pass-heavy attack, because they can do it there in the pass protection. They were good in that regard last year. It was always run blocking was where the issues were. We saw these problems last year against last year's schedule with an NFL running back with Chris Brooks, who was dealing with an injury. Like, this has been an ongoing issue,
yep.
And I think that's one of the reasons why Darryl Funk might be offensive line coach, might be on the hot seat now, because this offensive line has underperformed, because I do think the talent is there. Hey, quick programming note, BYU, West Virginia, this Saturday, kicks off at 5 p.m., Morgantown, West Virginia. Extended pregame, we're kicking things off at noon, man. It's going to be a loaded show.
Going to be a lot of fun. One final thought for me on the offensive line. You just can't expect people to just become something that they're not. And, like, BYU fans should know this better than anyone, right? Coaching and scheme in the 80s is why they were so good. Not because they just rolled out dudes and they were better than other people. Like, football, there is a huge element of coaching and scheme to football. And I think that's what you and I have been saying today, is let's change the scheme a little bit. I know you can't overhaul it. Go full pass, and let's see what happens.
I agree. Another thing before we get out, BYU football news that came out just before our show. BYU football is going to have a home-and-home series with future ACC team SMU. They're going to go to SMU in 2024. Then SMU is going to come to Provo in 2027. It's believed that will replace the Utah game next year on the non-conference schedule. So next year's non-conference, Southern Illinois at home August 31st. At SMU, date to be determined, and then at Wyoming, September 14th. Ooh. So that's year two in the Big 12. Year one in the Big 12 continues this Saturday against West Virginia, and the Cougars look to get that elusive sixth win against the Mountaineers. And Cougar Nation is brought to you by Blue Barn Wealth. Check out the show on the podcast feed on KSLSports.com. From Matt Biamonte, Mitch Harper, our producer Nate Slack. We'll talk to you on Saturday here on KSL.